got a sprain or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
Obesity is a disease that affects over one-third of the U.S. population, and with it comes a considerably higher risk of developing high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and cancer. Also, around 25 million people in the United States are diabetic, with another nearly 80 million in the pre-diabetes stage. So you would probably think that most office visits are related to these particular diseases. But that's simply not the case. Carmen is going to list the 10 most common reasons that people go to see the physician.
Skin disorders like cysts, acne, and dermatitis, joint disorders such as osteoarthritis, back problems, cholesterol problems, upper respiratory conditions, psychological problems including anxiety, bipolar disorder, and depression. Chronic neurological disorders, high blood pressure, headaches, including migraines and diabetes.
Many of these are related to chronic pain, including headaches, joint and back pains, and chronic neurologic disorders. In fact, when causes are lumped together as to symptoms, pain is one of the most common complaints people go to the doctor with. In the United States alone, more than 100 million people are estimated to live with chronic pain.
Chronic pain is very different from acute pain. Acute pain is what you experience when you get hurt, say, when you break a bone or burn your hand, or when something goes wrong in your body, such as indigestion, appendicitis, or passing kidney stones.
Acute pain is like an alarm system. It tells your body it is being or has recently been damaged so that you could do something about it. The message can be, the burn is too hot, so please stop touching it, or the tendon in your ankle is damaged, so stop walking on it.
Chronic pain is different. It is like an alarm that's malfunctioning or goes off when it doesn't need to, like a smoke alarm with a dying battery.
Sometimes acute pain becomes chronic. Usually we consider a pain to be chronic if it has lasted at least 3 months, or if the pain has persisted longer than it typically would for whatever caused it.
Unfortunately, acute pain sometimes changes how our brains are wired. When you sense pain, what's happening is that your nerves are detecting a problem and sending signals to your brain.
Your brain then sends signals out to your body, aimed at removing danger and directing the healing process. When signals are constantly going back and forth, it's like your nervous system gets in the habit of sending them, and sometimes it doesn't stop even when it should.
But sometimes we do not even need the initiating acute pain cause. In other words, chronic pain can develop on its own. There may be no initiating injury or surgery or other non-causal agent or activity.
Let's look at some other causes of chronic pain. Now, these include arthritis, fibromyalgia, lupus, multiple sclerosis, cancer, nerve compression, such as occurs in sciatic and carpal tunnel syndrome, neuropathy, migraine headaches, joint dysfunction, and any autoimmune or inflammatory syndrome. We have mentioned that there are many causes of chronic pain. There are also different types, and these may be described as shooting, burning, electrical stabbing, dull, achy pain, or just tenderness.
There is also a pain that is called hyperalgesia. You could call this pain amplification, where the pain increases more than you would expect. For example, you might press someone on the elbow and get nothing more than a heavy touch response.
But someone else who has hyperalgesia would note significantly high pain with just a touch. In other words, when the nerves detect pain signals, the nerves send more signals than they should, and the brain over-responds as well. The result here is that you experience far more pain than you normally would.
What kind of medical problems can elicit this hyperalgesia? Well, you might see it in strokes, nerve damage, inflamed tissue, fibromyalgia, and some other central nervous system sensitivity disorders.
There is also allodynia, which means pain from something that isn't typically painful. That can include a light touch, fabric brushing against the skin, or even moderate cold or heat. We often see this in patients with migraine headaches, again, fibromyalgia, and other central nervous system disorders. The problem here is that many poo-poo these pains as if they were all in your head.
Remember when former Attorney General Jeff Sessions said, why don't those people with chronic pain just take an aspirin and go to bed? Or why don't they just take a buffer and tough it out?
Have you ever heard the term pain triggers? Chronic pain just isn't always constant. Sometimes there's a trigger, or what I call the initiating event, that starts a round of pain, such as irritable bowel syndrome, where the pain may only be present after eating certain foods. This could still be considered chronic.
The same goes for knee pain that's triggered by cold or overuse, but isn't there all the time.
I remember an old joke when someone says to the doctor, Doc, every time I step down on that foot, I feel pain. Ah, then don't step down on that foot and you'll be okay. Next patient.
Pain, especially chronic pain, can be the cause of or be caused by many other symptoms such as fatigue, poor sleep, depression, anxiety, decreased appetite, impaired mental function, nausea, and even poor coordination.
But not everyone with chronic pain will experience all of these symptoms. So if you go to see a physician and tell him that you have chronic pain, he'll probably ask you what, where, when, why, and how questions. The first question he'll probably ask is, where is the pain? The next questions will probably be when and why. In other words, when in the day and what kind of triggers seem to initiate or even worsen the pain.
A pain journal is a good idea to keep, no matter when you see the doctor. The more complicated your pain is, the more it may help your doctor determine the cause of your pain and how to fix it.
The doctor will also like to know a description of the pain. Is it burning or stabbing? And how bad is the pain? You may have had physicians ask you to tell you how painful it is by using a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being no pain and 10 being terrible pain. But in my years of practice, I have not found this to be very enlightening. So I created my own comparative pain scale. It uses words and descriptions rather than simply numbers to quantify and qualify the pain.
For example, a 0 might be no pain with the patient feeling perfectly normal.
A 1 might be a barely noticeable pain, like a mosquito bite.
A 2 would be a minor pain, like the discomfort of someone lightly pinching your skin between two fingers.
This would go up and up through 5, described like strong piercing pain, such as when you stand on a sprained ankle, or maybe a mild back pain.
An 8 could be an utterly horrible pain. In other words, a pain so intense that you can no longer think clearly, with the pain dominating your senses.
But the pain scale doesn't stop there. We would finally have a pain listed as a 10, meaning pain so intense that you feel that you will go unconscious shortly.
One of the problems with a number-only system is that each person may have a different view of a 1 to 10 scale.
So many times I've asked a patient what number pain, and they have said 15 or 100. Obviously, this really doesn't help the physician much in quantifying the pain.
There are lots of treatments for chronic pain, and these, of course, can vary greatly depending on the diagnosis.
Medications may include anti-inflammatories, corticosteroids, anti-rheumatic drugs, antidepressants, muscle relaxants, and opioid painkillers.
But there are non-medication treatments as well, such as physical therapy, massage therapy, chiropractic care, acupuncture, nutritional supplements, psychotherapy, and mindfulness training.
There are also injections that include trigger point and epidural injections. In the future, we may even have stem cell treatments. And for many, medical marijuana has helped limit the pain that one has from various types of chronic problems.
Sometimes lifestyle changes may also help you feel better, such as dietary changes, modifying activity levels, special accommodation at school or work, quitting smoking, stress management, and stopping alcohol.
Patients and doctors have long complained that there are few new treatments for chronic pain, and those that do come along are often just reformulations of old medications or have unwelcome side effects. So what is new on the horizon as far as safe chronic pain treatments?
A new drug application has been submitted to the Food and Drug Administration for an opioid of the future that is less addictive, and research has uncovered a new way to treat neuropathic pain long-term with a single injection.
In experiments on laboratory mice, researchers at the University of California at San Diego discovered a new method to block the root cause of pain with the injection of a naturally occurring protein, apolipoprotein A1 binding protein, or for short, AIBP.
This chemical literally turns off a receptor called TLR4 that sits on the surface of nerve cells and searches for signs of infection or tissue damage.
Turning off the receptor prevents and even reverses inflammation and other cellular processes that create the sensation of pain.
A single spinal injection of AIBP relieved neuropathic pain associated with chemotherapy in the mice for 2 months with no side effects, according to findings published in the journal Cell.
What makes this different from how we treat pain now? Well, first, by inhibiting the TLR4 receptor with AIBP, we actually modify the pain processing systems themselves. So if you think of neuropathic pain as a disease, then we see this as truly disease-modifying. We're blocking the underlying mechanisms that cause pain, not just masking the symptoms. And neuropathic pain is a common side effect of chemotherapy treatments for cancer. Chemotherapy not only inhibits the growth of cancer cells, it can permanently damage nerve cells and make people sensitive to even the slightest touch. Remember hyperdynia and allodynia that we talked about earlier in the show?
One of the co-authors of the study, Yuri Miller, MD, a professor in the UCSD Department of Medicine, said that he thinks that if it comes down to a choice between living with chronic pain or getting a spinal injection once every few months, most people would take the injection.
AIBP could remove the need for opioids and reduce the potential for drug abuse.
Nektar Therapeutics has announced what it calls the opioid of the future.
NKTR-181 is a new type of opioid that shows promise in relieving moderate to severe pain, with less risk of abuse and addiction of traditional opioids like oxycodone or hydrocodone.
Because of its slow rate of entry into the central nervous system, NKTR-181 significantly reduces the high or euphoric effect that recreational drug users crave.
Many pain sufferers simply don't feel that high when taking opioid medications. They just get pain relief. In trials, NKTR-181 showed a 65% reduction in low back pain versus placebo in tablets taken twice a day.
Safety studies found recreational drug users had significantly less drug liking of NKTR-181. Even at high doses, when compared to oxycodone, participants also had less daytime sleepiness and fewer withdrawal symptoms.
If it receives FDA approval, Nektar hopes to launch the drug commercially as early as next year.
Well, it's time for our mid-show break. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky with Carmen Lasky, and this is Hey Doc.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
Did you listen to that menagerie of eerie voices? Did you recognize some of them? All of them? They came from several different horror movies over the past 30 years or more. How is it that a sound can send a chill down your spine?
Inquiring minds want to know.
I want to know.
By observing individual brain cells of mice, scientists and Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory are studying how a sound can incite fear.
There is a portion of the brain called the amygdala, where sights, sounds, and other stimuli take on positive or negative associations through experience. Interestingly, the continuous process of learning and unlearning that occurs in the amygdala appears impaired in people with anxiety disorders or major depression.
So this research could also result in better treatments for those medical problems.
The researchers found that there were profound changes in neuron activity when they trained animals to fear a particular sound and associate another sound with a reward.
According to Dr. Lee, looking at the pattern of brain cell activity in the amygdala, you can know whether the animal is expecting a reward or fearing a punishment.
They taught the animals to associate one tone with an annoying puff of air. That was the punishment, while the reward was a refreshing drop of water to drink.
They started out by firing the two tones randomly.
Then one tone was repeatedly accompanied by the puff of air, and it was noted that the neurons fired in a very specific pattern, which just happened to be the same firing pattern of brain cells that fire when the mouse actually experienced the punishment. Likewise, when a tone was repeatedly paired with a sip of water, the sound-sensitive neurons fired in a pattern similar to neuron activity when the mouse received the water reward.
As the firing pattern became more specific, the animal licked in response to the anticipation of water and blinked in response to the punishment-associated sound anticipating an air puff.
Then the researchers did something very interesting. They switched the meaning of each tone. When the reward sound was repeatedly accompanied by an air puff, the neurons let go of the established reward firing pattern and adopted the punishment pattern. The researchers finally stated that they came to a conclusion that they think is how sound acquires meaning. So a sight, sound, or even a smell we have sensed may not later trigger fear, but if the stimulus is associated with a traumatic event, such as a car accident, then fear memory is formed and fearful responses are triggered by the stimulus.
Animals develop fear responses to dangerous situations.
But as we all know, not all fear memories, such as those in PTSD, are beneficial to our survival. For example, while an extremely fearful response to the sight of a helicopter is not a useful one for a war veteran, a quick response to the sound of a gunshot is still desirable.
For survivors of car accidents, it would not be beneficial for them to relive the trauma each time they sit in a car.
In other lab experiments, they found that fear memories can be manipulated in such a way that some beneficial memories are retained while others, detrimental to our daily lives, are suppressed.
In the brain, neurons communicate with each other through synaptic connections, in which signals from one neuron are transmitted to another neuron by means of chemical neurotransmitters.
Research in the formation of fear memories associated with a specific auditory cue disclosed that selective strengthening in synaptic connections is involved, which convey the auditory signals to the amygdala. Another similar research project was undertaken with the mice being exposed to two sounds, a high-pitched tone and a low-pitched tone. Then they paired only the high-pitched tone with a mild shock to the mouse's foot.
The mice were then exposed to the two tones. The mice responded by ceasing all movement, called freezing behavior. When the high-pitched tone was played, the mice showed no such response to the low-pitched sound, which was not accompanied by a foot shock.
The researchers found that such behavioral training strengthened the synaptic connections that relay the high-pitched tone signals to the amygdala. Then a method using light, called optogenetics, to weaken the synaptic connection was used, which erased the fear memory for the high-pitched tone.
They were still able to experimentally stimulate just those neurons that responded to the high-pitched sound.
Then, using low-pitched stimulations with light, they were able to erase the fear memory by artificially weakening the connections conveying the signals of the high-pitched tone that were associated with the aversive event. In other words, the foot shock.
So, the results of this research shows that for adaptive fear responses to be developed, the brain must discriminate between different sensory cues and associate only relevant stimuli with aversive events.
This study really appears to expand our understanding of how adaptive fear memory for a relevant stimulus is encoded in the brain. And it may help us develop a new intervention to selectively suppress pathological fear while preserving adaptive fear in PTSD. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.